The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. And today we have got a pediatrician with us. And I cannot wait to talk to you. And you'll find out why in just a minute when you hear about my morning. But here with me today is Dr. Jen Trattenberg. Dr. Jen, as she is well known, is a parenting expert, a board certified pediatrician, and the co-founder of the Baby Bundle app. She has a successful private pediatric practice in New York City for over 20 years. She's also an assistant clinical professor of pediatrics at Mount Sinai, and she's appeared a number of times on NBC's Today Show, CNN, and Fox News. Her mission is to maximize the potential within every child. Her life work as a pediatrician and a parenting expert emphasizes the importance of a child's emotional, behavioral, and physical well-being while really improving on their social and environmental factors to reduce the risk of chronic disease in adulthood. She's written a number of books, and we'll talk about those in just a few minutes. Welcome, Dr. Jen.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for taking the time out to join us. And I'm excited to talk to you today because I had a really interesting morning, one that I'm sure many parents bring to you when you talk to them. My sweet daughter, who is 9 years old and very bright, as I'm sure all parents think their children are very bright. But anyhow, she now has access to an iPad because some of their work, homework, is now on iPads. She also has a Mac that my husband gave her for Christmas that she had been asking for a really long period of time. Well, what I've noticed over the last couple of months is that she's becoming increasingly distracted. We had a really tough morning because she didn't remember to put any of her stuff together while I was away last night. And it just made for a little bit of chaos in the family where I find her retreating, honestly, due to electronics. So what I did after she left today for school was pack everything up, put it away in a safe, and I'm really essentially detoxing her from all these gadgets. You know, I'm sure parents today have a million things to navigate. We're busy. A lot of us as mothers have careers, and we're not with our kids 24/7 a day. How do we talk to our kids about technology and approaching technology? You're a parenting expert. You come with a lot of experience, obviously, as we just detailed. What do you tell a parent like me when we're dealing with this with our children?
Sure. Well, to begin with, it certainly depends on the age of your child, correct? So you have a 9-year-old, and we really live in this world, as you said, that technology is not going away. It's just increasing more and more. And there's that spillover now from school. My children have the same thing, that everything's on the iPad, so they have that in front of them all the time. But definitely, I think what occurred this morning, you can really use as, you know, a lesson and a tool to speak to her. Because one of the things really is so important are those habits of, you know, being on time and responsibility. And a great thing that you said is, like, at night it sounds like she usually has this habit of supposedly packing up all her stuff and getting ready, or maybe picking out her clothes and having her backpack all ready for school the night before. And that's, sort of a great thing that you do. But maybe right. She may need the next step of maybe a checklist or something that she can definitely check off at night to make sure that that was done before then she gets to play or have some of her computer time. But I think with, like, things like the computer, that there definitely has to be limits, and there's not, you know, really is what's been coming around. It's not really a specific, you have to sort of see what works right for your family. But I think that certain things that you said, if you're noticing that it's taking over other aspects where, you know, she's not getting enough social family time, or she's not speaking to you, you're not getting the things done that were done before, then there's a problem. Then it's obviously, you know, it's too much, and you do need to cut back on it. Making zones or times, maybe that she can't be doing it when she's in her room alone. Maybe she has to just have her Mac in the family room so you know what's going on. Or at certain, you know, making sure that obviously she doesn't bring the electronics to the dinner table. So I think it's like a great time, you know, tonight when everything's calm, maybe go and speak to her and, you know, talk about that you're not saying that she can't have it, but talk about, like, the limits and why they are, you know, why they are so important.
Well, those are all wonderful tips, and I'm sure you get asked this a lot by other parents. Do electronics and children and their use? I mean, I know when I speak and when I'm in my practice, I get so many questions about, you know, what's the right amount of time? You know, is it a total time or is it just computer right. time? Do you add computer video and phone time? How do we yes. as parents really navigate that space? And you pointed out a couple of things for me that I agree with, and I think the biggest challenge is as busy mothers, you know, it's easy to brush things under the rug and ignore stuff. But I mean, I think those are some of the key. Any change in your child, anything where a child goes from being responsible and organized and pretty together to now wanting to run to their computer every few minutes, I think that's a child that's not ready for that amount of electronic activity. But what do you tell parents in general?
Exactly.
Do you have some key rules that they really should be following?
Sure. Well, you know, really starting at that, first of all, that really young age, because that's sort of sometimes, again, with little kids, that has the foundation. So I think it's important for parents to know those really young kids, newborns, I know it sounds silly, but newborns through 2 years old, they really do not need electronics. Right? Kids, we want them to learn through social interactions, with playing, that 3D touching, and manipulating toys. It's so much more important. You know, I think people are scared that if they don't have this electronics, they're going to fall behind and they're not going to end up at Harvard. You know, it's really not true. I mean, really, we're really trying to get them to learn through play. And that's really what the studies, you know, and the scientific research shows, that that's how kids really learn and they thrive. So that's really at the youngest age. And then, yes, as they get a little bit older, toddlers to the kindergarten, there are studies showing that it can be a tool that can be positive, that it can be educational, but in very small doses. So certainly it's fine if you have, you know, a high-quality educational program that your young toddler is watching because you're making dinner or something else. That's, you know, totally fine for 30 minutes or what have you, or an hour to the day. I knew, obviously, I'm a mom, I was a working mom. You know, sometimes you need a break, too. And mm-hmm. that is definitely okay. But the thought that just putting them in front of the TV or putting them in front of a computer where they can sort of push buttons and things is helpful, is misguided. There's actually, you know, more negatives than positives. And then as your kids get through this elementary school age, I think it's really important to something that you brought up, that it's not just, you know, television, but it's screens in general. So there's the iPads and there's the video games and now, you know, the phones. So that's all just that time when they're just looking down and looking at the screen. So you have to sort of count right. all of it. And as I said, you sort of have to make sure that everything else that they need is happening. Because if you think those school years, they're at school many hours of the day, right? They come home, they have mm-hmm. homework to do. They may actually have to use a computer for that, and that's okay if that's part of their schoolwork. But you have to schedule in that time for them to run around, to play, to exercise, to have, you know, socializing face-to-face with another child or a relative. All those parts, you know, have those free times to go outside and play. All that is really important and crucial to their development. You know, so not just the social interaction that they may feel that they're having, you know, because they're talking to their friend or they're chatting with them too. So I just think that parents need to keep that in mind and, you know, really make some, you know, hard and fast rules like we do, like, you know, and I do, like no screens and no interruptions at the dinner table, and make that like a sacred right. time. Also before bed too, not just getting too much, but we know that sleep is so important. It's important for everyone, but for kids, to get them wind down at night, that hour before they go to bed, it really should be no screen time. So, you know, keep those TVs and the computers closed and out of the child's room, because obviously you never know, they may wake up and then be on them or using them. Mm-hmm. Same thing with homework. You know, it may be if your, you know, child has a phone, it may be that, you know, you leave the phone in the kitchen and, you know, in the basket in the room, and when it's done, they can have it back, because it's just so tempting to try to multitask, and then they're not really concentrating, and it takes twice as long for them to do their homework. So, you know, that also can be something that's done, and then it can be given back to them. So I think you have to see what you're comfortable with, but most important, follow through. That's, you know, really important, so the child understands.
And What those are such helpful hints, and for our listeners, just as a reminder, so essentially when we're talking technology with Dr. Jen, who is a parenting expert, has practiced for over 20 years and has written a number of books as well, you know, her approach and her rules I would agree with. It's really, you know, none for the newborn to two-year-old, and I think a lot of us, you know, we're excited in the early days of technology where there are all these quote-unquote educational toys, which we found out after the fact are really not that helpful. And then following that is, you know, your toddler and older, those for those children, really no more than 30 minutes to an hour at most. And then after that, you have the elementary kids, and really that's variable. You have to account for their homework time. And once you've accounted for their homework time, really being careful about what they're doing in addition to that. So really setting limits, making it a family affair, not letting them retreat into their room, you know, supervising what they're doing, you know, and again, not to bring up last night and this morning, but I mean, she was playing a game apparently with my husband, and she was being messaged by people. It was a trivia game. So all of these are safety things that we as parents really need to navigate, but we don't want to spend all our time with Dr. Jen talking about technology, although we could probably go on forever. Dr. Jen, what are some of the other issues parents today are bringing to you? What are some of their biggest concerns or fears or things that you're having to navigate the most frequently?
Well, there's always, as I spoke a little bit about, but sleep is a very big issue with parents, as well as really getting their kids to eat healthfully is a really important issue. And, you know, I always tell parents it's never too late. Obviously, I'm so lucky because in my practice I get to start with also when they're young and build on those habits. But I'm always talking about parents that you want to start with little habits and then build upon them, because if you just, you know, basically say, you know, we're never doing any junk anymore and you can only eat, you know, this fruit and you can only do this and we're never having any snacks, it's going to backfire. So I think the issue I'm always telling parents is to try to make it sort of a family affair, not really singling out one child. There may be a picky eater, there may be a child that's eating really well, but I think one of the most important things is really making it a family affair, but also being a role model. And I know that's hard. That doesn't mean that you have to be perfect, but it means letting your child see what you think is important, what you think is important strategies for your family, and then continue to work on it with them. So the issue of, you know, breakfast in the morning, I think it's really important for kids because they do have a very long day ahead of them, and you don't often know what they're eating for lunch. So it's a great idea for them to have a healthy, you know, breakfast, for example, in the morning that has, you know, healthy proteins in it and not just sort of simple and sugar and a lot of high, you know, fructose simple corn syrup carbs and a lot of processed food, because then they sort of get that crash mid-morning. So there's so many things to go about having a good breakfast in the morning. Not only, like you said, it has to, you know, be there for them, but they have to want to eat it and they have to have the time to eat it. So something like as simple as what you said, often it's just a timing issue that I hear, that they're just, you know, too tired in the morning. Well, the planning would be getting things ready the night before. You know, I can even set the table the night before, even have in the head, you know, what is the meal or what is, you know, what do your child want? So they can be part of the process, but also the planning is really important. And again, it's sort of a thing that you can do with your family. One child can pick something one day, another one can pick the next day. And so that's just really getting everyone involved and, you know, being on the same page with everyone in the family.
And I know, and I know how difficult that can be for families, because many families are in different circumstances. There are a lot of single parent families. There are a lot of dual career families. There are all kinds of different situations. So sometimes multiple people are coming in and doing the caregiving, but really everybody has to be on the same page. I mean, the children ultimately need structure, and that structure gives them accountability, and then that accountability leads to good habits. So I love the idea of planning the night before. I also have always insisted on breakfast and setting aside enough time for breakfast, and one that's higher in protein, higher in good fat, so that they can definitely sustain their energy throughout the day. Why do you think kids today are not getting enough sleep? I'm always surprised in practice. I mean, you know, when I'll see a patient and they'll talk to me about their sleep schedule, and, you know, some of these sports practices are starting at 9 o'clock at night, or a game's ending at 9:30 at night, and then they still have homework. You know, what do you think is going on culturally, and maybe from a lifestyle standpoint with our children, that they're not getting enough sleep?
Yeah, so there's definitely two sides. I agree with what you're saying. Sometimes there's over-scheduling, that they have so many activities, and it's great for them to have activities and to be active, but there also has to be that time for downtime for them to unwind before they go to sleep. And yes, it's very variable from school to school how much homework they have. I do think certainly it's ridiculous, to be quite honest, the amount of homework or busy work that kids have. It's not often necessary, and quality is, you know, so much better than quantity for many of the things that they're learning. So that sort of is an issue too. But I think that, again, with that being said, you have to sort of work in the structure that your child has. So limiting those activities, you know, if they had gymnastics one night, then maybe they shouldn't also be going to their friends afterwards, or maybe then that would be a great day, you know, to have even an easy dinner at home, even if it be a sandwich or something like that, as opposed to going out because they had a later night that evening. And you want to really make sure, we talked about the electronics, but really you need to have good, what we call sleep hygiene or a good sleep routine. Mm-hmm. So they need to start a good, you know, hour before bedtime, getting everything ready for the next day, even, you know, taking a bath, maybe relaxing, excuse me, or, you know, a bath or a shower, whatever they prefer. But just sort of that time to unwind, put on their pajamas. And then really, you know, it's a great time then to, they can read as opposed to being on their computer or even watching TV. I always found that a great time to have that one-on-one time with my children. They're of different ages. So just, you know, even just to speak to them before they go to bed, find out what's going on, just give them a little reassurance, getting ready for the next day. And it's just that wind-down time. Even small things in your home, like turning down the lights in the evening, turning off all that background noise just throughout the house or the apartment. Again, just like even signaling to everyone, it's you know, time to quiet down a bit, and that can also help too.
Well, I love all of those ideas, and I do think for all of us as parents, and you know, even for me when I talk to my patients as a pediatrician and integrative doc, you know, really talking to them about the importance of the evening and the importance of the morning and how that really sets the tone and the rhythm for your child's routines and for their habits and for how they're going to progress, honestly, throughout life. I'm curious, Dr. Jen, you know, I was talking to some parents recently, and I don't know if it's happening in New York, but here in Atlanta, there are a couple of schools that have opened, but they have an altered schedule. The children only go to school like 2 out of the 5 days a week or 3 out of the 5 days a week. And the other days are home study. It's not homeschooling, but it's a new school where basically the premise is that the school day is too long. These kids are overscheduled. They're not getting time to think creatively because it's just too much of a schedule and a structure and a rush to get from point A to point B. What is your thought about that type of educational program and children's health? Do you feel like that's the right way to go in the future? I'm just curious.
Yes, it's interesting. I don't know specifically about that program or anything here like it at that moment. I would have to sort of know more. Definitely the premise of making more projects or even group things, you know, working together, again, getting rid of some of that busy work, maybe more downtime for reading and then going over it and you know, sort of learning in different modalities, whether it be tactile as well. So it may be great that it could be done at home. I don't really know. You know, does that mean that they're alone or they're doing it on a computer? I don't really know the essence
of
it.
That's true, too. So good point. Back to electronics. Definitely.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, exactly. Or is it with other people? Or is it, you know, is it more parental involvement? So I think the overall, I don't know enough specific to say, but I think that overall concept of really changing the way kids learn from that rote learning and just testing to really understanding and conceptualizing more abstract learning. And also, I think, you know, learning those skills and those that are important for life and health and resiliency and helping them to cope better and deal with stress and other things that come up in their life are really important too. It's not just about the grades or you know, doing really well in a subject at school. Life and accomplishments are multifaceted, and I think that actually can be incorporated better in school as well too.
Definitely. Now, a lot of my patients ask about, you know, the standard pediatric checkup or the well check as we know it. And the well check for me, at least in practice, has shifted over the years to include different issues and different concerns. What would you advise one of our listeners? Maybe we have a mom out there listening today who's getting ready for her next doctor's appointment or pediatrician appointment. What would you kind of advise her in terms of really maximizing the impact of that appointment and really getting the most out of it?
Right. So it's certainly, as you said, it definitely can be difficult because you don't really have that much time with your pediatrician or your physician or your provider. So you want to make the most of it. Again, take that little bit of time to prepare before you even go. So if you do have questions, write them down, or you know, put them on their phone, or just have them so it's easy accessible. Because often, if your child is crying or anything else is going on, you may get distracted. So come with the questions. I also tell people, ask them right away. The doctor may wait till the end to answer them, but you're sort of setting up what you want discussed or what you think is important at that visit. So don't wait till what I call that doorknob moment when the doctor's like walking out the door. Like, ask them up front, and this way they'll either have to answer them then or schedule more time to speak with you on the phone or have you come back for a visit. But this way you sort of get out there what's important. And this may sound silly, but you really need to be honest and truthful. You have to feel comfortable with your healthcare provider. That's the way that they can help you the most. So it's important when if you're setting the scene and you're telling them about the illness, but you also, if they ask if you're taking any medicine, so it's important to include everything, whether it be a supplement, an herbal, a vitamin, a medication that maybe was prescribed to someone else. They need all the information to help diagnose and to help treat your child appropriately. So you shouldn't be scared. If you're scared to speak with your doctor, then it's probably not the right provider for you. So really paint that picture and give all the information that may be pertinent and helpful to your doctor.
Fantastic. So really get prepared for those visits, have a list of questions, and again, so much of medicine is connection and relationship. Make sure you can connect and have a good conversation with your doctor, or it typically is counterproductive for both of you. A couple more questions, and I do want to talk about your books as well. I'm curious of your take on antibiotics and how much you're using them today in practice in your early days when you started. Have you seen a shift there? What do you think about antibiotics in general in practice? I know, you know, when I was in training, they talked about using antibiotics for ear infections, and now the majority of ear infections, we let those go because we know now that almost 95% of them resolve on their own. What's your take on the use of antibiotics in our children, and are we overusing them? Are we underusing them? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think globally or as a whole, it's definitely seeming like they're still used quite a bit way too often. And I think, though, that it is shifting, that I think parents are really understanding more. And are not really in that demanding, well, I came to the office, so I need to get an antibiotic. The message that I've given my patients, and I think that they know, is that antibiotics only work on bacterial infections. They fight off bacterial infections. They don't help with colds and viruses. And many of those illnesses that kids get are definitely viruses. And a lot of watchful waiting, like you said, even with the ear infections, or even things like croup or coughs and things, you know, we really want to steer away from antibiotics, one, if they're not necessary, but also because they can have unnecessary side effects. You can have an allergic reaction. You can have a rash. It can give a young child vomiting or even diarrhea. So the child ends up feeling worse or sick or for longer periods of time. So I think that I found with my patients, they're understanding when it's necessary, and that they would rather come back for another visit to be seen than to just be given an antibiotic, because, you know, we don't even know if it's working or if it's even necessary. And obviously we are seeing much more resistance and seeing things like, you know, parents know what MRSA is now. And basically those are skin infections due to resistant organisms to antibiotics that we used to use all the time. So, you know, and that's scary. So I think it's really good if you, again, having that, establish that relationship and really understanding and respecting one another and respecting the doctor's decision when they explain why an antibiotic may not be necessary.
Yes, and again, I can't stress this enough, because people don't understand the full ramification of an antibiotic. I think it's seen as an inconvenience when a doctor might ask you to come back and check again. But every time you go on an antibiotic, it not only, you know, we're not only increasing the chance of antibiotic resistance, but we're also affecting your child's digestive health, you know, because
100%.
Every time we give antibiotics, we change the microbiome. You know, you have... Exactly. And we're understanding today that the majority of health in general, especially for our children, is rooted in the microbiome. So I think that,
so important.
You know, I know so many people would parents would push back on that, and I get how difficult and challenging it is to keep running in and out of the physician office. But at the same time, I think we do a better service to our children by having more frequent contact with the physician and more frequent check-ins than having these long gaps and trying to manage things, you know, here and there. I've learned that in practice too. Nowadays, I'm asking patients to come back a little bit more often because I feel like it just makes for a better relationship, you know. So
exactly, and also, you know, having, as you said, that one provider and that relationship back and forth, you really know the patient, you really know the parents well, and you can better holistically, when I say holistically, treating the patient from their mind, their body, their gut, their emotions, everything, that you know what's going on with them, than opposed if you're just going to an urgent clinic or an emergency room. So having that medical home really helps them.
Makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it's really important.
Well, I'm seeing a shift, though. I feel like more parents are understanding of that, and they desire and they crave that, and they crave that connection. So
I'm loving that.
I love it, too. And it's definitely been a change, I think, in the last couple of years. So I think it's exciting. It's exciting to see that. Dr. Jen, you've written a couple of books. Tell us about your books, and if our listeners want to get a hold of you or find out more about you, where's the best place for them to go?
Sure. Well, my first book was called Good Kids, Bad Habits, and it's really about making those small changes early on to improve long-term health, because we know our habits from childhood can continue and they really have an effect on our health as we age. My other book is called The Smart Parent's Guide to Getting Yourself Through Checkups, Illness, and Accidents, and a lot about what we spoke today about empowering parents and really speaking up for their children and advocating and learning what to do, whether they're in the doctor's office or they're at the hospital or even in the pharmacy, how to get the best care for their child. My website is drjen.com. It's dr-jen.com. And very exciting, I'm actually in the midst of making a new webinar series for parents, starting at the newborn to two age. So hopefully that will be out by the summer, really about we're still deciding on the title, but really like the pediatrician in your pocket, having that information at your fingertips, what to expect the first 2 years of life, what to do, how to prevent illnesses, and what to expect. So I think that may be really helpful for parents to tune in and talk with me and really have that extra information when they're even just at home before having to have all that anxiety about worrying about is something normal, can they wait or not, or is it an emergency?
Definitely. I know that many parents would appreciate that and really benefit from these resources. Well, Dr. Jen, I've stretched you from electronics to antibiotics to what to expect in your pediatrician appointment to the new schooling and all kinds of topics in between. I know these are things that our listeners and parents today are grappling and wrestling with, just as I did this morning and last night. But we appreciate your time and your advice and your counsel, and we may have you back on again as you get your webinar developed so that we can talk about that as well.
Awesome. I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you. And thanks for taking the time to join us.
Great. Have a great day.
Take care.